Our conclusion to the Radio City closure in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. This is the Rain Report for October 13th. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. Assemble a room full of YLs whose spouses are hams. Then take a poll as to how many of those YLs are favorably disposed toward ham radio. You might be surprised how few of these ladies have little, if any, tolerance for a hobby their husbands devote so much time to. But that family dynamic is meant for another Rain Report. A most notable exception to the rule are Dan and Maylene Fish, the co-owners of Radio City, a ham radio store near Minneapolis that will be closing in December after 34 successful years in business. Dan, KB0XC, credits a great deal of the store's success to Maylene.
My wife Maylene and I started this company together, and we actually own exactly 50% of the company. So there's been no greater methodology to make sure we get along than that. There's no majority rule here. We just have to agree and find a way to do that. Mm-hmm. When I did the thing for Fox and I did the thing for PBS, I was adamant that she be interviewed as well. But for some reason, because of the nature on this thing, I wasn't that insistent. But I think it's very important that your audience understand that this would not have been possible without her and her support and her partnership in us achieving where we are. In fact, I would say more often than not, she's the one that's recalled than I am. Yeah, they come to me for technical answers, but when they want a part or they need a thing, they're going to her and so forth. So Maylene has been every bit as important to the growth and supply and good luck and acceptance of this company, Radio City, than I have.
Is she a ham, by the way?
She is not.
That's fascinating. How many wives tolerate ham radio, let alone run a ham radio business with their husbands and are presumably happy doing so?
Not only that, you know, she goes to 90% of the ham fest that we, her and I go together. We load that vehicle. We unload that vehicle. We stand and we sell and we do these things and we plan. And she works with all of the clubs relative to scheduling us down there and all of that business. If they want prizes, they go to her. You know, so I can't tell you how important she is. You can imagine that. And I want to tell you, if you're not getting along with somebody that's going to help you lift up a box and pull it out of there, you know you're in trouble.
When I interviewed Bob Trover of TNT back in 1987, he was rather bitter about the fact that hams are cheap and that hams will make a half a dozen phone calls to different distributors just to save $10 on a $1,000 radio. I suspect that hasn't changed at all.
Well, I'd like to go up and kind of wrap up Bob Trover's attitude a little bit. When you're not doing well, you either assume it's somebody else's fault or your fault. And so I suspect maybe Bob was trying to put the blame for the behavior of his ham radio experience on ham radio operators. The reality is that what hams are doing is what all consumers do in the United States. They're making a decision on what it is they want to do and justify the procurement of a new piece of instrumentation based on what the manufacturers are saying about what their buddies are saying about it, what it is they need to do and what the costs are and what their jobs are and all of it. That is the consumer's job. Now, it's my job that when the doorbell rings, my job is to sell them something when they come in. And so what I have to give them is the justifiable reason for why they should buy that from me. Those things are very abstract. It is not always price, but price is the thing that is the most obvious. But they want to keep the store going. I mean, look, it's 2018. We're very fortunate because we get to retire on top. We've got thousands of great supporters. We just had our goodbye party, our last Hamfest up in Carlton, Minnesota. We've been going to Carlton for years. It's a small, modest club, and the way they treat us is just fantabulous, and the way we try to treat them is the same way. You know, you either are into that and want to treat your customers the very best you can, or you're not. You can't make that decision for other consumers. But to me, that's what it's all about.
However, now, on top of that, you've got the Chinese element that is really creating problems. Talk about the influence of the Chinese market.
When I worked for Ball, I was the director of quality for the electronic display division. So I look at the quality of the goods. Now, there's a lot of people that say, well, that cheap Chinese stuff. Well, let me tell you, you know that Zenith and all the TV stores and manufacturers in the United States moved all of their supply overseas, and foreign suppliers provided all those goods to the United States. And they did it in the same high quality standards that the originals did. And because of Japan's influence, probably did it better. Because the quality of Japan, which is the competitive standard, surpassed that of many United States suppliers. And they did that because they had to ship that stuff overseas, and they could not afford to have a huge repair process going on. So they had to make their goods very, very conformal to the demands of the market. Well, then they moved it from Japan to Taiwan, and from Taiwan to Korea, and then from Korea to mainland China and Malaysia and all over the world. So our goods have been coming for there for years. And if it wasn't for the fact that there was Chinese goods introducing a VCR at $22 or a CD at $22, based on the collapse of the American job in the United States to $10 an hour, you'd probably have riots in this country. So the use of Chinese goods has moderated and made possible procurement of goods that normally would have been out of reach. I'm sure you remember having to go to Sylvania and paying $300 to $400 to $1,000 for a VCR in 1980. So today, you know, those goods, now we don't even have those goods anymore. We have CDs and we have little chips and all that to do that. So I think Chinese goods have been a great asset and have pushed the technology and have benefited amateur radio operators. And so I think, again, the amateur radio operator has decided where the best value for their American dollar is. And to me, that is clear. And if Japan doesn't get going, they're going to lose the HF. And the only reason they haven't lost the HF now is because China doesn't have as much HF communication permission in that country as they do in 2 meter stuff.
I suspect that a fair amount, if not a great deal, of the product coming out of China has been secured without paying the copyrights and licensing that your Kenwood, ICOM, Yaesu folks have had to do. Having said all that, one observation I have is that, and on one level, it's too bad that we have the cheap radios from China, because that does impose some challenges upon your traditional manufacturers of ham radio gear. On the other hand, if I, as a new ham, go to a ham store or online purchase a 220 handheld, a band that I'm not familiar with, but I want to try for $50 or less, what do I have to lose? And maybe I'll like it so much that I'll go out and spend more money on 220.
You're listening to a conversation Rains Hapali, KC9RP, had recently with Dan Fish, KB0XC, about the demise of Radio City, a ham radio store Dan and his wife Maylene co-owned for the last 34 years. We'll conclude Hap's interview with Dan in a moment. This is the Rain Report. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
I mentally battle both sides of the argument because both sides of the argument are valid.
I think you're on the money, and so I don't want to pour down an area of copyright. I don't favor that. There's a lot of people that have spent a lot of time and money securing copyright aspects. I just would take a moment to point out a couple of things. That if I go to page 56 of the 1957 handbook, I think there's a great explanation of single sideband radio there. I probably need to move up 10 years, maybe in the 1960s. What I would like to do is just mention an aspect of ham radio, which is a big advantage that we have, and probably an advantage we have currently in the country as an example, that hobbies concentrate on the forward momentum of the hobby and not the extreme left or the right of our growing kind of tribalism issue that we have in the country right now. But we can talk about how we can move various aspects of technology forward and what's important to the advancement of our hobby without having to worry about the right or the left, which I think is a great asset of togetherness that we can push forward. The other thing is that you're right about your 220. So as an example, I know the state of Iowa elected to no longer have D-Star. They've gone to DMR. And the reason they did that, which I said, why the heck did you do that? You had this whole D-Star thing installed. And they said that the cost to their volunteers was a $300 to $400 radio or a $99 digital mobile radio that would help them cover the entire state. So they made that type of a decision then for the advancement of the hobby and better coverage in the state of Iowa and reduced cost based on the introduction of Chinese radios that were very cost effective from TYT was the company that they chose. But there's other like Baofeng now does tier 2 DMR and so forth. So if you look at what we're doing in propagation, investigation, and so forth, it's amazing what low-cost equipment has allowed the amateur radio operator to participate in things. So it's true then I don't pass a lot of judgment on getting into the copyright side. I think that's up to our senators and our congresspeople to say, when you come into this country, then this has to be obeyed. I'm not going to make a decision on that. You know, I spend my life, philosophically speaking, trying to add to the forward momentum of the hobby. And so that's my direction. I think what we need to measure for the hobby is the definition of what the hobby is and where we as a membership want it to go is not dependent on whether the product was made in Japan, Kyoto, or Beijing. That it has to benefit the technology of the direction we want. And we have to recognize that if we want technology, that sometimes we have to pay for that. I am suggesting is that we probably at this time in this country need to probably pull the direction of the ham radio to make sure that it's always separate from the supply chain. So that we're kind of directing where the supply chain should go, that the supply chain is not directing where we should go with the hobby in a technology standpoint.
The analogy is the tail wagging the dog.
There you go.
What regrets do you have about the business now that you are closing after 30-some years? What do you wish you could have done or should have done that you didn't?
You know, you can always go back and take a look at it, but and there's maybe different things that you could have done differently. But relative to what we wanted to do in the business, I think that we've accomplished and run the business the way that we wanted to. I can only tell you that when we go out to Hamfest, we have people come to our store since we announced our retirement. I can only tell you that the support has been phenomenal, I think. what more would you want in life than that? We're pretty satisfied with where we ended up, how we ended up. We both got our health. There's no reason necessarily for us to quit. We had a family incident a year ago where my poor brother passed away that kind of got us thinking about each other and the burden that you might leave for the other if something happened to us. And so we thought, yeah, probably it's time. And who knows, maybe some of us step up and take the store over. There's still a little bit of hope on that. But today's world is a little bit different than what it was in the 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, when we decided to, you know, go off in this direction. So I don't think I would really go back and tinker much. Anything else that I would have done would only be so maybe I could be a more significant entity in the United States. But I don't know that that action would expand what is important in my life.
What advice do you have for someone who has a dream of owning a ham store?
I guess my suggestion would be actually quite simple. Make sure that what you do benefits the amateur radio community and your customers who support you rather than your pocketbook. Your customer will return to the place they feel well served. They may not make you wealthy, but they won't let you starve to death. Stay true to the hobby and the customer, and I think that you're going to do well.
And that concludes our two excerpts from a conversation with Dan Fish, KB0XC, who, along with his wife Maylene, co-owned Radio City, a Minnesota ham radio store that is closing after 34 successful years in business in Minneapolis. While it is most unfortunate Dan and Maylene are closing up shop in December, their story is a testament to what a couple can accomplish when both are on the same frequency. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2018 Rain, all rights reserved. This weekly hamcast updates Saturday mornings on therainreport.com and Saturday evenings immediately following the Amateur Radio Newsline around 9 on WTWW Shortwave out of Lebanon, Tennessee on 5085 kHz. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding all you radio widows very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network. Just remember to keep on hamming.